Psalm 139. We're going to be finishing up this psalm this evening. Psalm 139. Let's go ahead and begin with the first verse and just read the whole psalm. It's not all that long, and it'll give us the context and let us see the whole thought process here in this psalm. Psalm 139, beginning with verse 1. O Lord, Thou hast searched me and known me. Thou knowest my down-sitting and my uprising. Thou understandest my thought afar off. Thou compassest my path and my lying down, and art acquainted with all my ways. For there is not a word in my tongue, but lo, O Lord, Thou knowest it altogether. Thou hast beset me behind and before, and laid Thine hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high, I cannot attain unto it. Whither shall I go from Thy Spirit, or whither shall I flee from Thy presence? If I ascend up into heaven, Thou art there. If I make my bed in hell, behold, Thou art there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there thy hand shall lead me, and thy right hand shall hold me. If I say, surely the darkness shall cover me, even the night shall be a light about me. Yea, the darkness hideth not from Thee, but the night shineth as the day. The darkness and the light are both alike to Thee. For Thou hast possessed my reins. Thou hast covered me in my mother's womb. I will praise Thee, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are Thy works, and that my soul knoweth right well. My substance was not hid from Thee when I was made in secret and curiously wrought in the lowest parts of the earth. Thine eyes did see my substance, yet being unperfect, and in Thy book all my members were written, which in continuance were fashioned, and when as yet there was none of them. How precious also are Thy thoughts unto me, O God! How great is the sum of them! If I should count them, they are more in number than the sand. When I awake, I am still with Thee. Surely Thou wilt slay the wicked, O God. Depart from me, therefore, ye bloody men, for they speak against Thee wickedly. Thine enemies take Thy name in vain. Do not I hate them, O Lord, that hate Thee, and am not I grieved with those that rise up against Thee? I hate them with perfect hatred. I count them mine enemies. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts. See if there be any wicked way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. The character of God is revealed in the first 18 verses of this chapter. It deals with His omnipresence. He's everywhere all the time. His omniscience, that He knows everything. There's nothing can be hidden from His knowledge. And His omnipotence, His greatness in creation and even the creation of a little babe in the womb. And David found comfort and hope in this. And we ought to as well. It ought to be the same in our lives as we read this. We see the greatness of God and the fact that we know that God's everywhere. God's all-powerful. And God's all-knowing. And that is an encouragement. We also pointed out that it's also a conviction. Because we can't get away with anything. God sees it all. But then when we think about in contrast here, David suddenly makes an unusual turn. Verses 19 to 22 just seem totally out of place in the psalm until you really think it through. And that is, he turns and talks about the wicked. And I think what he's saying here is that the same God is over the wicked that is over the righteous. The same God that His character awes us, and we look at that and say, what an amazing God who knows all and is all and is everywhere and is all powerful. That's an amazing God. But that same amazing God is the God of the wicked as well. They reject Him. They don't want to know about Him. But He's still the God that is over them. And they will one day answer to Him. And so, as we look at this, this reality led David to three conclusions. Number one is that God will destroy the wicked. God will destroy the wicked. Verse number 19, he says that surely Thou wilt slay the wicked, O God. The wicked have shed innocent blood. He calls them bloody men. The word bloody is not used in the Bible as a curse word. It's a word to describe those that have blood on their hands because of murder. Doesn't matter whether it's a man or a woman who has committed murder. The implication is they've got blood on their hands. Even if it wasn't a blood-stained murder, they still have blood on their hands. They've taken the life of someone else, and the life of the flesh is in the blood. Jesus said that being angry without a righteous cause deserves the same punishment as murder. Remember what he said there in Matthew 5, 21 and 22? He said this, "Ye have heard that it has been said of old time, thou shalt not kill. And whosoever shall kill shall be in danger of the judgment. But I say unto you, that whosoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of the judgment. And whosoever shall say unto his brother, Raca, shall be in danger of the council. And whosoever shall say, thou fool, shall be in danger of hellfire." Pretty powerful words Jesus was saying here. So he's equating anger with murder. So anger is pretty serious. The doctors who kill the thousands and millions of babes around the world in abortion are guilty of murder. They're bloody men. The mothers and fathers that pay for those abortions are guilty of murder. They're bloody men. And so he says here, "Surely thou wilt slay the wicked, O God. Depart from me, therefore, ye bloody men," those with blood on your hands. The wicked here speaks of those that speak against God. It says in verse 20, "For they speak against thee wickedly." They speak against you, God. They speak against you wickedly. The word wicked there is a different word than we find in verse number 19. Up in verse number 19, it's the typical kind of a wicked you'd think of, somebody that's really bad or evil or corrupt. But this word here for wicked in verse number 20 speaks of thoughts or plans that are evil. So it's more of their thoughts and their plans. He says, "For they speak against thee with their thoughts and plans, their evil plots." They speak those thoughts and plans against God and oppose God. And they may oppose God openly or promote vices that God hates. And this sounds much like the times of Noah. Think back in the days of Noah. What did God say about the days of Noah? He said there in Genesis 6, verse 5, "And God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of man was only evil continually." The filthy talk that prevails in today's music, and is so common that it's even on the lips of the school-aged children, fits in the same category. Speaking evil. Filthy thoughts. So heartbreaking to hear little children that don't even know what they're saying. They're only 7 or 8 years old and they're using F words and all kinds of filthy talk because they hear it all the time at home, they hear it at school, they hear it everywhere they go. It's tragic. God says that he speak against God wickedly. Not only that, but he says that they take God's name in vain. They treat God's name, even the word God, as an expletive in their daily conversations. Everywhere we go, you can hardly take a trip to the grocery store without hearing someone and say, "Oh my," and then they put God in there. That is taking God's name in vain. That is swearing and cursing. It ought never come across our lips as Christians. Using God's name to damn something is another example of blasphemy. Exodus chapter 20, the Ten Commandments, verse number 7. says, thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain, for the Lord will not hold him guiltless that taketh his name in vain. God says, they will be guilty before me. When they stand before God, God's going to say, you used my name as rubbish all these times. God knows every single time that they've done that. And God says, you are guilty. You are guilty. You cannot use my name that way. That is wrong. And we ought never to use God's name in any context that cheapens or harms it or shames it or curses it. Never. And I think that there's a similar sense in which other Bible terms like hell and damn and bloody ought to be exclusively used when we're discussing Bible issues, not to be used as curse words. And we hear that all the time. I've heard numerous Christians use the word hell in their conversations and the word damn in their conversations. Those are words that speak of biblical terms that need to be kept in a biblical context because they're serious. And to cheapen them by using them to as an explanation or an exclamation, I should say, in our conversation is wrong. So God says here that, well, David's speaking here, he says, for they speak against thee wickedly, and thine enemies take thy name in vain. We see secondly here that godly people will hate the wicked. They'll hate the wicked. David speaks for the godly here in verses 21 and 22. He's representing the godly group. And he says, do not I hate them, O Lord, that hate thee? Godly people side with God against the wicked. You know, David said that he hated the wicked with perfect hatred. And you know, in your mind, you might be thinking, well, I thought it was wrong to hate. How come David hated? Well, as we think about this, I don't believe that you can see in the context here that David hated them for something they did to him. He was angry and hated them because of how they treated God. And we need to have more of that kind of a spiritual hatred in our heart. It ought to boil in our heart when you hear people curse God and swear and use God's name in vain and hate God and reject God and blaspheme God. That ought to grieve us down in the depths of our heart. But we hear it so often that sometimes we just kind of, it doesn't really faze us. But we ought to have that holy hatred for those things. The theological word study of the Old Testament defines hate in this way. It says it expresses an emotional attitude toward persons or things which are opposed, detested, despised, and with which one wishes to have no contact or relationship. So he says a person, you know, he says, David said, I hate them. I don't want to have anything to do with them. I don't want to have any contact with them. I don't want them around me. And that was his attitude toward it. It wasn't so much that he was out to kill them or something in hatred. It was he wanted nothing to do with them. Another commentary described it as, it says, like a thorn. Hate causes one to turn away from another. That's a good illustration. You know, those thorn bushes, whether it be a rose bush or whether it be some other bush with big thorns on it, what do? They cause you to turn away. Say, I don't want to go near that thing because every time I get near it, I get bit. You know, stabs me with its thorns. And so David said, this hate is something I just don't want to be near them. Every time I'm around them, it pricks me and it hurts me and it grieves me. I don't want to be around that. He said, I hate that. David did not say that he hated those who mistreated him. No, he said there that he hated those who hated God. And he hated contact with those that hated God. He did not hate them because of what they did to him, but because of their sin. And there's nothing wrong with that kind of hate. To hate something that is repulsive to God. And that is anti-God. And there's a lot of things in our world that are anti-God. Godly people grieve when the wicked oppose God. And David here mentions this. He says, am not I grieved with those that rise up against thee? The word grieved there means to be despised. He says, I despise that when they do that to you, God. I cannot stand that when they do those things to you. We can see here that David had a close relationship with God. It was like a close friend. It'd be like one of you husbands hearing someone say nasty, rotten, filthy things about your wife. That ought to grieve you. That ought to stir you up and get you upset. It ought not to be done. You ought to defend her. And so it is with our God. If we love Him and cherish Him, and we hear people cursing Him and belittling Him and putting Him down and ruining Him with their tongue, it ought to grieve us. David said, it truly grieves me. They were taking hostile stand against God, and he said, I don't want that. I don't want to see that. Those who slam the Bible, curse God, and mock creation, and promote evolution, and persecute God's people are working against God. And we ought to detest anti-God statements in the media and in our society. We ought to despise that. If you watch television and there's curse words that come on and people are blaspheming God, you really ought to shut that off. It's not right to sit there and listen to it. It's filthy stuff that ought to grieve us to the heart. Godly people then also hate the wicked perfectly. David goes on there and he says in 22, I hate them with a perfect hatred. It's interesting that he calls it a perfect hatred, a complete hatred, a hatred that was completely against the sins of that they were doing. This is a hatred that is much like God's hatred as possible. It's hating the sin but loving the sinner. We ought to do that. Godly people will not love any celebrity or sports figure that hates God. Oh, how we see so much of that today. People that are held up as heroes. Children have pictures all over their walls. This is their heroes. And yet those people are filthy, godless, wicked, rotten people many times. Not all of them, maybe, but a lot of times that is the case. Ought not to be our heroes. We are not to love those that hate God. Godly people, then he says, treat the wicked as enemies. He goes on in 22 and he says, I count them mine enemies. I count them my enemies. David was literally saying there, they have become my enemies. They become my enemies. A person who is against God is also against those who desire to live like God. You live a godly life? What's going to happen? Those who hate God are not going to like you very well. They're going to say, I don't want to be around you. You're weird. You keep talking about God. You keep saying I should guard my mouth and don't swear. And don't. I don't like being around you. You irritate me. I'm going to leave. They don't like that because they don't want to be around that which is godly. Such persons are God's enemies and thus become the enemies of godly people as well. So David here says, I hate them with a perfect hatred. I count them my enemies. But then that brings us to the third point I want us to see in the last two verses. Godly people will desire God's evaluation. Godly people will desire God's evaluation. Now, these last two verses fit in well when we see what he has just said. He's pointed out in the first 18 verses God's greatness and goodness and comfort and encouragement. Then he goes on and says in 19 to 22, the wicked are just the opposite. They turned against God and we need to hate them as God hates them. Not hate the person, but their sin and the things that they're doing. And they oppose God and that ought to grieve us and that ought to hurt us because they're cutting our God and they're hurting our God. And then he says, God, I don't want to be one of them. In the last two verses, he says, Lord, search me. Make sure I'm not doing the same thing. Search my heart. All right? So he says there in 23, search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts. All right? And as we ponder this, godly people invite God to search them. And David here asks God to search. The word literally means to explore his being. I want you to explore my being and know my heart. The word know there is a word that depicts to perceive, to look closely, to discern, to consider. He said, God, I want you to explore my heart, my life, and I want you to examine my heart, to discern and to look closely, perceive what's deep down inside of my heart. As far as David knew, his heart was clean before the Lord. But to make certain, he said, God, I want you to search my heart. As far as I know, there's nothing there, but Lord, would you search my heart? You know, folks, that's a good practice for us to do as well. To just say, Lord, as far as I know, there's nothing that I need to confess. But if there's anything that I have overlooked, search my heart, reveal it to me so that I can talk to you. And, you know, folks, I've done that many times, and God brings up things that I forgot all about. And then I have to say, Lord, all right, thanks for reminding me of that. I'm sorry. That wasn't right. I shouldn't have done that. Would you please forgive me? And we deal with those things with God. So on days, you know, it reminds me of when I was a boy. One of the things that my brother and I had to do living on the farm, came time when you had to clean the barn. Not a fun task necessarily. But we'd go back, and I remember we weren't very big. We were just young little boys. And we were trying to please Dad and help Dad out. So we'd go back there with our forks, and we'd start cleaning out the barn. And the manure was deep in there. We'd shovel it out into the manure spreader, take it out in the field and spread it. We were only, you know, 10, 11 years old. But we worked all day. But when we come back for lunch, as soon as we walk into the house for lunch, Mom says, what have you boys been doing today? Oh, we've been cleaning the barn. Oh, I figured you must have been. And they can smell it. And you know, when we hang around the world, if you make the world your friends and you hang around them and their filthy talk and their filthy activities and their filthy conversation, it's going to penetrate you. You're going to have a hard time getting it out of you. You know, my brother and I couldn't say, well, Mom, we'll just go outside and wave our arms a little bit and the smell will go away. And it didn't go away that quick. It took some washing and cleaning. And so it is with our world. We need to come to God and say, God, would you search my heart? Is there anything in there that stinks? Anything in there that shouldn't be there? The worldly flesh, the devil that's in there trying to get me to go wrong. So spiritually, we need to ask God to search us and cleanse us from those things that are wrong. He goes on and he says, he invites God to test his thoughts, try him or test him. He says, try me and know my thoughts. The word try there literally means to examine his thoughts through testing. We've all been through those testing times in school. You've learned the materials, or supposed to have learned the materials, and they give you through a testing to see whether it's sunk in. And he's saying here, God, I want you to test me, to check me out, see if it's there, see if I'm clean or not. And a divine inspection of the heart will reveal any thoughts that have sinful motives or vengeful feelings or bitter tendencies or carnal desires and all of those kind of things. So he says, God, I want you to know my thoughts. Try me and know my thoughts. As David, we ought to want God to search us because we should not want any corruption in our lives. We ought to say, God, I want to be clean. I don't want there to be anything in me. Sometimes we may be fairly clean, but not as clean as we should be. One of the things that I've done a lot of in my younger days is putting the gyprock mud on the joints of gyprock. I've done lots and lots of that. And you know one thing that is a real pain? When you get some that, you know, when I was done at the end of the day, I would clean the bucket that had the mud in it, clean it off good, throw away anything that had any crumbles in it, smooth it off, put some water on it to keep it moist. Because if you had any dry crumbles in there, they were a pain. You get them on there, you try to spread it out, and there's a big old streak. Oh, throw that away, try it again, another one. And you'd have to get those streaks out because they would just mess it all up. Those little bits, you couldn't hardly see them. They're little tiny things, but they just a little speck of dirt or a little speck of hard putty, And it would mess up everything you're doing. So it is in our life. God looks at us and says, you know, I want you to be clean. You know, when I spread that out, I want you to be nice and clean. I want it to be smooth. I want your life to honor me. And I don't want any of those streaks in it. I don't want any of those spots in it. I want it to be clean. God wants us to keep ourselves clean. Godly people invite God to discern them. We see verse 24, and see if there be any wicked way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. See if there be any wicked way in me. Yeah, David here is asking him, God, to look for that wickedness in his heart. Now, it's interesting. I have found it so helpful to look up the words as you're studying. Because the word wicked in verse 24 is different than the other two words wicked we've heard. He's used the word wicked three times in this passage, but every one of them is a different word in the Hebrew. This one is quite a bit different. In fact, it is a word that means pain or sorrow. It can't even mean an idol. So it's only used in the Bible about four or five times. But what he's saying here is, see if there be any painful way in me. Anything that gives you pain, God. I don't want to cause you any pain. I don't want to cause you any grief and pain and sorrow. I don't want that. See if there's anything in me that would do that. And so he's asking God, God, just check inside of me. Look in my heart. Is there anything in there that would give you pain? If there is, God, show me what it is. I want it out of my life. I don't want to be like these wicked people that hate you and curse you and are against you and do things that are evil in your sight. I don't want to be like that. I want to be clean inside because you're a great God and I want you to be pleased with my life. If David was following any path that caused God pain or sorrow, he longed for God to reveal it. You know, this is a key. The right paths are not simply those that make life enjoyable, but those that cause God no pain. The right paths are the paths that cause God no pain. As a grieving parent grieves when a child goes astray, so God grieves when we go astray. And he says, I don't want any of my ways to cause you grief or sorrow or hardship. I want my life to please you. My thoughts, my actions, my attitudes, my testimony, I want it to please you. And then he invited God to lead him the right way. He says, lead me in the way everlasting. He wanted God's direction for the distant future, the way everlasting, probably referring to everlasting life, though he doesn't specifically say that. The word actually means for a long time in the future. Lead me for a long time in the future, or toward the long time in the future. So it probably is referring to everlasting life, but he doesn't specifically state that. David here long for God to lead him in a straight way. You know, last youth activity we had, I taught the children on from a verse in Proverbs that says, there's a way that seemeth right unto man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. I said, there's two ways in life. You got the way of death and the way of life. Jesus used the same parallel in the New Testament. He said, there's a way, a broad way that leads to death and a narrow way that leads to life. Few there be to find it. God doesn't make the way hard to find. It's not that. It's that we don't like it. It's so much easier to walk down the broad path. It's hard to walk down this narrow, constricted path that leads to life. And David's saying here, God, I want to be on that narrow path. I don't want there to be anything in my life that grieves you, gives you sorrow, gives you heartache, gives you pain. I want my life to be clean. And so as we sum up this amazing psalm, We've seen God's omniscience, His understanding of all things, His omnipresence, He's everywhere around us, His omnipotence, His ability to do all things, including form a little babe in the womb and develop all of the details of that body in the womb. God is amazingly powerful. But then David turns that and he said, it led David to these three conclusions, that God will destroy the wicked, and that godly people hate the wicked, and that godly people will desire God's evaluation. We don't hate the wicked because they've done nasty things to us, but because of what they've done to our God. It's all about God. This whole psalm is about God. About God's greatness. God's goodness. We need to keep our focus right on who God is. And realize that we need a greater love for God so that we will defend our God. And even have the courage. I'm preaching to myself now. When you're around people that don't know the Lord and they use a curse word, just to say, excuse me, you just said that about my God. I'd appreciate you didn't talk like that. That takes courage. I don't know how often I've ever had the courage to do that. I'm a coward too. But I think we ought to. That's what David was saying. We need to hate those that hate God. Hate the things that they do that grieve God. And ask God to be pleased with our life. And then just, you know, these last two verses here, if you've never used them as a prayer, you need to. These last two verses are a wonderful prayer to pray to God every day. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts. See if there be any wicked way in me and lead me in the way everlasting. That ought to be our passion, our desire, and our prayer every day. Just crying out to God, God, would you search me and make sure there's nothing in me that shouldn't be there. And when God says, what about that? What about that? Oh, Lord, I didn't remember that. What about that one? Oh, that one too. I'm sorry. And we need to get it right with God so that we can have a clean heart. It's like God reaching down into the gyprock mud and picking out all the little specks of stone and getting it out of there. He said, all right, now it's clean. Now it'll work well. Now it'll work fine. He says, I want you to clean me up. I want you to help me to see the wrong and help me to do right. So I challenge you to use this psalm as a psalm of encouragement, a psalm of rejoicing, but also a psalm that brings us to the place where we say, God, I want you to search me and make sure that I'm doing right. Keep me clean. Help me to do what's right in your sight.